This is Maryland Morning with Sheila Cast here on 88.1. I'm Nathan Sterner. More people live here in Baltimore than in any other city in our state. But during the summer months, Ocean City is number two. Year-round, fewer than 8,000 people live there, but between Memorial Day and Labor Day, the town's population explodes to a 250,000 or even more. Ocean City's been a vacation destination since the 1800s, but its summer population saw a massive upswing after the first span of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge opened in 1952. Before the Bay Bridge, Ocean City and the entire Eastern Shore were very separate from the rest of Maryland. Today, the shore's population is growing, incomes are rising, and its culture is changing. And the Bay Bridge plays a big role in all of that. The bridge was a long time coming, and the subject of many controversies along the way. Journalist David Guth has written a book about the history of the bridge and is on the line to talk about it. Good morning.
Good morning.
Your book is called Bridging the Chesapeake, a fool idea that unified Maryland. And it's an idea that's been discussed for quite some time, dating back to the 1880s. When did that talk start to turn into proposals?
The most serious talk occurred in the early 1900s, around 1908, 1909, when Baltimore business interests were beginning to get concerned that all of the trade from the Eastern Shore, the seafood and the vegetable trade, all of that was headed to Philadelphia. So they wanted in on the market, and that's when the first real discussions of a bridge, serious discussions, began.
And those discussions of the bridge have the bridge far closer to Baltimore on the western side.
Yeah, up closer to Baltimore, and it would have crossed over higher up into Kent County. Not only the existence of a bridge, but where to put the bridge was always a great controversy. It eventually ended up where it did because that's where the ferry connections were.
Yes, the ferry connection. In fact, the ferry was one of the big problems or one of the big obstacles to the bridge, the monopoly that the Claiborne Annapolis Ferry Company had for car transportation across the bay.
One of the great ironies of the Chesapeake Bay Bridge saga is that Governor Emerson Harrington, who was out of Cambridge, was the first governor to actually support the idea of building a Bay Bridge in 1915. But when he left office and he took control of the Claiborne Annapolis Ferry Corporation, he vigorously fought against a bridge for much of the next 25 years. The only times he ever changed his position was when he thought he might get a lucrative state buyout in the deal. If I remember correctly, when the state eventually bought out the ferries back in 1941, he got about half of what he was hoping to get. But that was substantially more than the state thought the ferries were worth.
Now, the bridge is officially the William Preston Lane Jr. Memorial Bridge. Lane, the governor of Maryland, when it really got underway. Tell us about his role.
Well, to me, William Preston Lane Jr. is the hero of the book. And Preston Lane had the vision, and I would suspect the stubbornness, to say, hey, we have got to build new roads, we've got to build bridges, we've got to build schools, and yes, we've got to pay for it. And it was very interesting that when he was elected in 1946, he barely beat Baltimore Mayor Theodore McKeldin by a very, very narrow margin. But 4 years later, after the 2 cent sales tax had gone through, and he was actually being pelted with pennies on the campaign trail by unhappy taxpayers, McKeldin beat him easily in a landslide. Basically, Lane put his political future on the line to do what he thought was best. And interestingly enough, then 2 years after he loses his election, he is hailed as a great hero because the bridge opens up and everybody realizes, oh, this is a great and wonderful thing.
Now, about 15 years after the first span opened, Marylanders got to vote on whether the second span of the bridge should be built, and they voted against the idea. Tell us some background there and how it ended up going forward anyway.
Late in Governor Taws's term, and this would be in 1965. He was supportive of building a second bridge, and in the same election that Spiro Agnew was elected governor, there was an advisory referendum on the building of a Bay Bridge. It had been pushed by Clarence Long out of Baltimore, who wanted to see a more northern bridge. And the Bay Bridge referendum was handily beaten by Baltimore voters, basically, in that election. But when Governor Agnew came into office, he basically said, well, it was an advisory referendum, and this is what we're going to do. And the other powers that be in the legislature, because he was a Republican and it was a Democratic legislature, they basically went along with him. And despite the vote against the Bay Bridge, they built a parallel span that opened in 73.
Were construction contracts in the Bay Bridge related to Agnew's eventual fall from the vice presidency?
The direct evidence is not terribly clear in the documents, but it appears that Agnew had been taking construction, had been taking bribes from contractors through his late days as governor up until about a year and a half into his vice presidency. So there was a link between the building of the second bridge and the resignation of Vice President Agnew.
So Agnew helped build it up, and then the bridge helped tear him down.
It's one of the great ironies of it.
The first span of the bridge was completed in 1952. The second span about 20 years later in 1973. In the four decades since then, talk of a third crossing has surfaced from time to time. Do you think there is going to be a third Bay Bridge someday?
My suspicion is there will be one built, but it's not going to be an easy thing. And I wouldn't be surprised if at some point they don't even consider the prospect of a tunnel, which was one of the considerations as far back as 52. But because of the growth of Maryland and the movement of the population, I think it's inevitable that another bridge will be built. But it's going to take a lot of political courage, just as it did with William Preston Lane back in 1952, or actually 47 when the bridge was approved. It'll take a lot of political courage to get it done.
David Guth is the author of Bridging the Chesapeake, a fool idea that unified Maryland. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's my great pleasure.
You can find out more about the book online at wypr.org/Maryland Morning. I'm Nathan Sterner. Stay with us.